And this morning we'll be talking with a guest who is new to the show. And the topic's not new, but he's certainly new to the show. Mark Jansen is Program Director of Energy Rated Homes Midwest. And we'll talk a little bit about what the concept of energy rated homes is. But very basically, it's a service, and it exists. There are offices, programs here that exist in many states around the country. The idea is that if you're buying a house or if you're selling a house, you can get these folks to come and do an energy rating of the house that will tell you the energy efficiency and also perhaps make some suggestions about things that can be done to improve the energy efficiency of that property. And so we'll be talking a little bit about that, but also more generally about where energy in the home goes. And if you have questions specific to your own home, you certainly can call. And I know our guest will do his best to respond to your question. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois or Indiana or any place that signal will travel. If it would be a long-distance call, use that number. We'll pay for it. That's 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL. That's what you get if you match the numbers and the letters. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Mr. Jansen, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And thanks very much for talking with us. We appreciate it. First, let's talk about the concept, the energy-rated homes concept. And as I said, I know that there are different states have these organizations, and we have this here in the Midwest. What exactly is Energy-Rated Homes Midwest all about?
Well, actually, there's accredited home energy rating systems in 50 states across the country. Maine was the most recent addition, and that makes all 50 states covered. But what the rating program is like a miles per gallon sticker on a house. It gives a customer a way to compare one house to another, or the relative energy efficiency of the house that they're either living in or looking to buy. What we do is a heat loss, heat gain calculation, and we take into account all the insulation levels in the house, the equipment efficiencies, how airtight the house is. We actually test the house with a blower door where we depressurize the house and calculate how tight the house is. We do a duct leakage test, and then we generate a report for the customer that will include ideas for improvements, such as adding insulation or replacing heating systems if these things are warranted, and what the cost savings will be, what the cost of the items will be, and what we try to do is to get the features to give what's called a positive cash flow for the potential buyer or homeowner. So in other words, their utility savings are going to go down by more than what their mortgage payment is, or what their mortgage payment goes up by.
Yeah, so the idea is you're going to do something, you want there to be a payback.
Right.
One way or another.
It's more than a payback, it's actually a positive cash flow.
Oh,
so,
uh-huh.
Let's say they make $5,000 worth of improvements, and they add that as a part of their mortgage, well, then their mortgage payment might go up by $15 a month. But if they're saving $40 on their utility bills, then they're $25 ahead each month.
Yeah. And this is a fee-for-service kind of arrangement?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. And in a lot of cases, mortgage companies will allow you to roll the cost of the service into the mortgage.
And roughly, is it different from one house to the next, how much this costs?
Sure.
Or is there?
It's generally about 10 to 15 cents per square foot of finished floor plan, with a minimum of around $250.
Hmm. So do you when people do this, say if somebody is trying to sell their house and they want to make sure that in addition to everything else about it, that it's as energy efficient as possible, and you come in and you go around and you look at it and you make some suggestions, do you find that you tell people things that surprise them, that they did not know or did not realize?
Not generally. I think a lot of people recognize what it is they need to do to their houses. A lot of times it's just the time or the money involved in doing it. But the time of purchase is the perfect time to remedy those situations. So a home seller could actually look at offering this package to the home buyer and say, you know, this is what our utility bills are now, but this is what our utilities will be if you do all these improvements at the time you get your mortgage. Mm-hmm. So it can become a negotiating tool in the sales process.
Is this something that interests lenders? I mean, is there anything in it for them?
Well, there is. Since 1979, there's been underwriting criteria that is called an energy-efficient mortgage, and that can work two ways. The energy-efficient mortgage can allow a buyer to stretch their debt-to-income ratio if the house is already energy-efficient. So, in other words, it helps them to qualify for more loan. And then, secondly, it can allow them to roll the cost of cost-effective improvements into a mortgage. And that in itself may make the house energy-efficient and then help the buyer qualify for more home as a result.
And you are in Indiana, right?
Right. I'm based out of Indianapolis, but I operate in five states. And I don't actually do the work. What I do is I train and certify inspectors, and I've got about 65 active inspectors in five states. And what they do is they do the inspections, do all the calculations, do the diagnostic testing. They send information to my office. We generate the reports, and we do quality assurance on their work. And on about 5% of the work, we do quality assurance in the field. So we go out and check their numbers.
We're talking this morning in this part of Focus 580 with Mark Jansen, Program Director of Energy Rated Homes Midwest. And as he's now has explained, you heard explained, it's an organization that provides this service so that if you are selling a home, you're buying a home, you're interested in its energy efficiency, what it is at present and what it could be and how to get to that point, what they will do is they'll come and they'll do that. They'll look at the house, they'll check it out, and then they'll tell you where the problems are and how you might take care of them. So, and we're talking not just about what it is that they do, but in larger sense, we're trying to talk about the idea of home energy efficiency. So if you have questions, and I think I've got somebody here ready to go we can talk with, you have questions, you can call us in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have somebody on our toll-free line to talk with, so we will do that right here on our line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
A couple quick questions, and I'm going to be driving out of my cell, so I'll hang up and listen for the answers on the radio.
Okay.
First one is the gentleman mentioned that he trains certified energy inspectors for his program, wondering how one goes about getting involved in that, becoming a certified energy inspector. Can you see
my name? Well, you're breaking up, I'm afraid. I got the first question.
Okay, second one I'll do quick.
Okay.
The state of Illinois right now has the best energy grant program in the country for adding renewable energy. Wondering what your guest feels about that, because, for example, right now the state of Illinois pays 60% of the total installed cost for a photovoltaic system on a home. Wondering what his feelings are about that, and I'll hang up now. Thank
all
you.
All right, well, thanks very much for the call. Well,
first of all, in order to be trained and certified, we have a week-long class that we hold here in Indianapolis at the Indiana Community Action Association training facility. And we train the people on how to use the software, on how to use a blower door, on how to inspect insulation and do takeoffs off plans and specs for new construction and so on and so forth. And then they're not fully certified until they've completed 12 ratings successfully. So we work with them through that process and make sure that they fully understand the process before we certify them. And then we always reserve the right to decertify them if we feel that they're just not capable of performing the task. As far as the state of Illinois' grant program, I'm not real familiar with it, but I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, the better mix of renewables and photovoltaics are a great up-and-coming technology that I think people ought to take advantage of if you know, the the situation warrants it.
Oh, for homeowners, people who are not selling their house, they're in it and they want to make it as energy efficient as possible. Are there now any sort of tax incentives that are being offered for people?
Well, there aren't. The federal government has passed at the House side a tax credit that is probably going to be reconciled through the Senate. The Senate is going to take it up in September, and before the end of the year, they hope that they have some tax credit legislation for energy efficiency. What they're looking at in the House right now is offering a $2,000 tax credit up to 20% of the cost of the improvement, up to $2,000. So you have to increase the efficiency of the house by 30%. So a baseline analysis would have to be done. And then you make improvements that will bring the house's efficiency up by 30%, and then you can take 20% of the cost of the improvements up to $2,000 in the way of a tax credit. It's not a tax deduction. It's a direct tax credit.
Mm-hmm. But that was, you still would have to have some independent documentation of where it was you started and the effect of what it was you did.
We think that there will be independent third-party verification required because most individuals aren't going to be able to calculate how they've achieved a 30% savings on their home. In the new construction realm, they're looking at offering a $2,000 tax credit to the builder if the builder exceeds the 1998 International Energy Code by 30%. So the builder would receive a $2,000 tax credit if he builds a home that exceeds the 1998 International Energy Code by 30%.
Okay, we have other callers. We'll go next to someone in Southern Illinois. This is line one. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Could your guest talk about insulation of a crawl space and whether you just do the perimeter or the under the flooring, what materials to use, the best effective way to do it?
Sure, we can talk about that. First of all, before you insulate any kind of foundation on an existing home, you want to make sure that the area is dry. You don't want to insulate a foundation wall that's got a lot of moisture in it, and then you isolate it from the heat source that it's accustomed to, and it can lead to cracking and freezing and settling of the house. So make sure that you take care of any moisture problems that exist before you insulate. As far as insulating, you should insulate up in the floor joist area. It's called the rim or band joist area. And you can do that with a variety of different materials. It's probably most common to use fiberglass bats. And you should use at least a 3.5-inch bat in that area. You could go as high as a 6-inch bat, which would give you an R19. And then you can insulate the down the foundation wall with fiberglass bats or with a 2-inch blue board, or you could have a spray urethane or a spray polyisocyanurate or even a spray cellulose. I won't recommend one product over another, but there's a lot of different potential in that area. What you should do is put about an R10 on a foundation wall, and that's what's recommended.
I've seen reflective insulation come in bats. Is that too thin to use, or where you could roll it out? And
yeah, I'm not aware of the effectiveness of reflective bats. I know that reflective barriers or radiant barriers are used a lot down in the south where the temperature is much higher, but all the research that I've read and all the studies that I've seen indicate that reflective material is not as effective in the northern climates.
And leave the vents open and around the foundation in the
summer? In the summertime, you can leave the vents open. In the wintertime, I'd close them up and cover them up. For a lot of years, or actually the reason that vents were put in originally was just kind of a rule of thumb. And now there's in the code books and some of the code documents, they're leaving it up to the builder's discretion as to whether or not they put in those ventilation or whether they put those vents in.
Because they might not be necessary? Or?
Well, they might be actually introducing more humidity into the crawl space than what they're taking out. Because if you've got really warm, moist, humid air on the outside and you've got that cold or cooler air in the crawl space, the air that migrates in through those vents is actually causing condensation to occur in the crawl space. So if you've got a dry crawl space, I'd say close the vents and leave them closed year-round. If your crawl space isn't dry, I'd go ahead and leave them open. You should also have a 6 mil or a Visqueen vapor barrier on the floor of the crawl space mm-hmm. to hold the moisture in the ground.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Next caller is in Savoy, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Yes. I am in fairly new construction, and based on what I'm seeing, do you really think these contractors are taking this energy efficiency very seriously?
Well, it's really all across the board. In Illinois, there is no state energy code. And unfortunately, builders can build any level of energy efficiency that they want to. I work with the EPA on a program called Energy Star, and the requirement for the Energy Star program is that builders build houses that are 30% better than the National Energy Code. And we've had some luck with some different builders in the Chicagoland area that are building all their houses to the Energy Star level. The largest builder in Chicago is Cambridge Homes, and they're doing two developments to the Energy Star level, and then they're offering the Energy Star level as an option to all their other buyers. Pulte Homes is doing the same thing in the Chicago market. So,
well, I know I have a sister in Cleveland who built a structural insulated panel home with steel construction, and I was mentioning it to some of the contractors, and they felt that would not be accepted and people wouldn't really buy and pay the money for that type of construction here.
Well, I think you'll find that over time that those new technologies will make their way into the marketplace. I mean, there's a lot of structural insulated panel companies out there. They don't have a large market share right now, but over time I think they will, just because of the availability of resources and the time labor savings that you have with that type of system. Another up-and-coming technology is insulated concrete forms.
Yes, there are a few in this area that do that, but again, they don't seem to be as well accepted by the general buyer.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it takes a while for people to accept something like that. I'll give you an example, though. I had a home, the first home that I bought here in Indianapolis was called a Lustron home. It was an all-steel, pre-manufactured home. It was a kit that you could buy from this company, and it went on a slab. It was porcelainized enamel on steel, and it was like a big erector set. And it was about 900 square feet. It heated and cooled really well. It was very well engineered. But it went out of business just because of lack of consumer acceptance. I think they built about, 4,000 or 5,000 of them across the country, and then they went out of business.
So does that get at your question? Well,
we must have lost
her. We must have lost her. I hope we answered her question. If not, she can call back. And, of course, anybody who has questions can give us a call. Our guest is Mark Jansen, Program Director of Energy Rated Homes Midwest. Now, he is based in Indianapolis, but the idea is that he works with lenders, buyers, sellers, his organization does, that are interested in getting an energy efficiency rating for a house and also getting some ideas about what can be done to improve the energy efficiency rating. And so if you have questions specifically about your own, the place that you live, you can call us 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I think really the thing that makes this sometimes difficult, particularly if you're talking about an existing house, is that obviously air infiltration is an issue, but the places that the air are getting in can be many, but can be small.
Right.
And I know that people may be surprised if you do this blower door deal and you actually tell them how much air is coming in and then you add that all up, you can say to them, you know, it's as if you had a hole in your wall that was 2 feet across.
Right.
And that will make an impression on them. But the thing is that you don't have a hole 2 feet across. You have all these little places here and there, and which can make it difficult to figure out, okay, where is it coming in? And then what do we do? If people were going around, they're walking around their house and starting to think, okay, you know, where is it most likely that air is getting in? Where would that place, or where are those places?
Well, for a long time, people all thought that the best place to try to control air infiltration was around doors and windows. And they caulked and weather stripped, and they thought, well, you know, that's the best place to attack the infiltration problem. The Department of Energy did a lot of studies on houses that were weatherized under the federal weatherization program, and they found that where the highest levels of infiltration occur are at the foundation and at the ceiling. So you can have leakage that can come up through an interior wall and come out through a light socket, or down from the ceiling through a plumbing penetration or through an electrical penetration in the wall, and leak into the house. And that's called thermal bypass. So it's a hard problem to address. What you really, the best way to address it and to attack it is to do what's called blower door assisted air sealing, where you turn on a blower door that you set up in the doorway of the house, and for every cubic foot of air that we pull out of the blower door, and the blower door is rated at about 6,000 cubic feet per minute, we can pull out 6,000 CFM. One CFM has to come in for every CFM that we pull out of the house. And it becomes readily apparent when you do that as to where the leakage is occurring at. So you can use a smoke pencil and go around and test for leakage. Mm. And then as you do air sealing, you can use the blower door to identify how much you're reducing that leakage by with the blower door running. Unfortunately, the blower door technology has not been widely accepted in the industry, or it hasn't been widely used in the industry. It started with the low-income weatherization programs across the country, and it's kind of working its way up through the infrastructure. So it's sort of an unusual technology that the low income got advantage of it first. But that's the way that air sealing should be done. And you were right, air infiltration is probably the largest component of heat loss in most houses. And a lot of people worry about getting houses too tight. Well, you can't get a house too tight. It's a misnomer it's a falsehood to say that you're going to get a house too tight. You can always ventilate the house once you seal it up. So, and the chances of getting an older house too tight are slim to none.
Yeah. Well, and even I know there was some concern in new construction that maybe at one point we were getting the houses so tight that we were starting to have a problem with indoor air pollution because
right.
there wasn't.
We still are. We're still getting new construction houses really tight, but we can introduce outside air in a controlled fashion, either directly into the cold air return or through a mechanical ventilation system like an air-to-air heat exchanger to control the amount of air that circulates through the house. So rather than having it come in just in any old-fashioned willy-nilly, we know where it's coming in and at what rate it's coming in. So we control the situation.
We have other callers here. Let's see. We'll go to line one. This is Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions. You were just talking about the blower door. Are those like a rental item, or an organization comes in to do it? Or
well, there's probably three or four companies in the country that make blower doors, and they're not cheap pieces of equipment. They usually run about $2,000 for a blower door. So no, you can't rent them. In some cases, people that I work with called raiders will lease them.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, it's something that you buy.
Okay. How do you know, you also just mentioned about indoor air pollution. I mean, what's the best way to figure out the quality of your indoor air?
Well, again, you have to test. You have to test to find out just how tight your house is. We go by what's called an ASHRAE standard. It's the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers. And they say that if your house is tighter than 0.35 air changes per hour, that means that 35% of the air turns over once every hour,
mm-hmm.
then you have to have at least 15 CFM per person in the house. So that's something that we calculate on every new house that we do for the Energy Star program.
Okay.
We also put the house in what we call a worst-case scenario, and anybody can do this. Anybody with a draft gauge, it's about a $7 item. Mm-hmm. You can buy it at most HVAC supply houses. It's called a Dwyer draft gauge. You can put that house in what you call a worst-case scenario. And you'd only do this if you're using combustion appliances like natural gas-fired water heaters or natural gas furnaces in the house, if they're located in the house. But you can close all the interior doors in the house. You can turn on the dryer and leave that door open to the rest of the house. Turn on the clothes dryer.
Uh-huh.
Turn on the exhaust fans to the house. Turn on, if you have a Gen Air, turn on the Gen Air. And so you're putting as much negative pressure on the house as you can naturally. And that is what we call the worst-case scenario. With the interior doors closed, the bathroom doors open, the bathroom exhaust fan on, then you would do a draft test on the water heater. At a negative 3 pascals of pressure, a water heater will backdraft. At a negative 12 pascals of pressure, you'll have what's called flame rollout. If you've ever seen a water heater that has a little bit of black char up the side of it, then that water heater has experienced flame rollout. Backdrafting is a serious situation, and it could be a deadly situation. It could just make you sick.
Mm-hmm.
But backdrafting in and of itself is not, as long as the appliance is burning properly, it's not a major problem. It's when the appliance stops burning properly and starts producing carbon monoxide that you've got problems. You know, you've got a real potential for catastrophe.
Okay. I have two other quick questions, if I may. The
sure.
First is, what's the best way to seal up gaps around your house, like an expandable foam or just...
Well, you want to be careful with foam. Minimally expanding foam is the best thing to purchase, especially around windows and doors. If you're taking off trim and sealing around doors and windows, you could, if you use a foam with a high expansion rate, it could actually cause your doors and windows to warp and not be able to open.
So the foam's better than just like a caulk?
Yeah, just make sure it's a minimally expanding foam.
Okay. And my last question is, I want to finish my garage in a house that was built in 1980.
Okay.
And I would like to insulate. Now, do I need to put a vapor barrier, like, on the studs and the outside sheathing, then the insulation, then the drywall?
Okay. Is your garage attached to the house?
Yes.
It is attached to the house.
That wall is insulated. The wall between the house and the garage is already insulated.
It's
the two remaining.
Drywalled. Okay, and you want to drywall the rest of the walls.
Right.
Okay, then a vapor barrier always goes to the warm side of the wall.
Okay.
So if you're going to use a craft face bat, is that what you're planning on doing?
Right.
Then that should go to the interior of the garage wall.
Okay. So between the drywall and the insulation.
Right.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Let's get on to, I think we have somebody here in on a car phone in Bloomington. No, oh, sorry. Well, do we have a Let's go to Champaign next, line number two. Hello.
Yes. I have a Lustron, and I would be interested in your specific recommendations.
I'm sorry, in my recommendation?
Yeah, for what to do with a Lustron house?
Yes.
For what to do with, well, I can tell you what I did with mine. There's not a lot you can do in terms of adding insulation to the walls because they've already got an inch and a half bat on the interior and exterior side of the walls. It was an interesting wall system. I would add as much insulation in the attic as you can because you have that forced air radiant heating system in the attic. And then on my house, I had single pane metal windows, and I replaced all of those with insulated glass vinyl windows. Now, I knew when I did that I was never going to recoup the cost for those vinyl windows. Mm-hmm. I started with an R value of about a 0.8 or 1, and I ended up with an R value after replacing my windows with an R value of about 2. But I got much better air control in the house, so it sealed around the windows really well. But I think I paid about $5,000 for those windows.
Wow.
And my gas bill was, it was less than $100 a month. So if I save 20%, I was saving $20 a month for something that I was paying on a $5,000 loan. I was paying $100 a month. So I was, you know, I was losing $80 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true in a lot of cases for windows. Windows are not the panacea that a lot of people think they are. I replaced my windows because of aesthetics, because of resale value, because of ease of operation, ease of cleaning. But I knew that I wasn't going to save a lot of energy by replacing my windows.
If one replaced with the best windows available now, would that situation alter?
With the best windows available?
Yeah.
No, because the price would go up.
I see.
I mean, you're not going to save half your utility bill by replacing your windows.
Okay.
And it would take at least half of your utility bill or more to be in a positive cash flow situation.
Okay. Okay, so adding insulation above is about the only thing you can recommend?
Well, and air sealing. Everywhere you can.
Right, that's the same as for everyone.
Right.
Okay, but nothing else specific?
No. I replaced my furnace, but only because I had a very inefficient furnace. My furnace was probably about 50% efficient, and I replaced it with an 80% efficient furnace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go on here to Pena. This is line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Put in a new furnace a few years ago, and they vented it out through the foundation, but they left my water heater gas vented through my old chimney, and I was just wondering if there was enough harm from the fumes that I could have it re-vented out through the foundation also.
Well, if it's a gas water heater, where is it located, sir?
In the basement.
In the basement? Okay. Well, what they did when they vented your furnace out the sidewall was they put in a high efficiency, a 90-plus furnace.
And yeah, it is.
It's a condensing furnace. So they could vent your water heater out the sidewall, but it would take a power hood. It would take a power vent to do that. And you might have to replace the whole water heater if it's not suitable for adaptation to a power vent. But they can vent a water heater out the sidewall.
But it takes a power vent, huh?
Right, it takes a power vent to do that. It's and a fan that goes that on, top of the water heater, and it would force the byproducts of combustion out the sidewall through your PVC pipe.
Well, as is, it's vented up through my old brick chimney, about 2.5 stories. But I haven't noticed any problem, but I was just wondering.
Yeah, it's possible to do that, but if you're not having a problem right now, you're not going to save a whole lot by doing that.
I'm not going to save a lot. No, I was just concerned with the toxic...
with the byproducts of combustion.
Yeah. Which I got rid of with the new furnace, but still have them with the water heater a little bit.
Well, the best way to find out if you've got a problem is to test.
I see. Just have the power company check it, huh?
Or you could do a worst-case scenario test like we were talking about a little while ago, where you do a draft test on the water heater to see if it is backdrafting.
Oh, I see, and sucking it back, uh-huh.
Right.
Okay, well, that should do it. I sure thank you.
Okay, thank you. And again, maybe just as I understand it, if you were going to try to do that, that what you would do is... anything that's an exhaust vent that goes to the outside, if you have one in the bathroom, if you have one for your range, if you have one on your dryer, that you should turn all those on.
Right, and leave the doors to those rooms open.
And then all other doors, interior doors, close.
Right.
Right, okay. And then the idea is then if you go to where the water heater is, where the vent is, you can, if you use some little source of smoke...
Well, you could do that, or you could use a Dwyer draft gauge, like a $7 draft gauge.
Okay, but then it would send. Then what you want to do is then, with all that other stuff going on, then you want to know is the vent from the water heater still venting those combustion gases out?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there's other variations on that test too, which I probably ought to mention, that you can do it with the air handler on and the air handler off on the furnace. So in other words, have the furnace fire and have the air circulating, because duct leakage in your house can affect air leakage. Remember I said for every CFM that goes out of the house, one CFM has to come in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have a return leak in your furnace system and you're blowing air out that return leak, well, that's pulling air out of the house. So you might have 50 CFM going out that return leak. 50 CFM is going to try and come in somewhere else.
We're getting to the point where we have just about 10 minutes left, and we have a number of other callers. We'll try to get in as many folks as we can. I should also introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Mark Jansen, Program Director of Energy Rated Homes Midwest. He's in Indianapolis. This is an organization, and they exist in states all over the country that provides a service, a fee-for-service energy rating of the home, and it's particularly something that is used by buyers and sellers to determine the energy efficiency of a property and then also get some suggestions on what could be done to improve the energy efficiency. And questions are welcome, and we'll get in as many people as we can. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have someone in Bloomington. They're next in line, line 4. Hello.
Yes. I had a question about something called a heat reclaimer.
A heat recovery ventilator?
It's supposedly, we have a steam heat system, and it collects warm air from the furnace and shoots it into the house.
Okay.
The motor is broken on it, and I really wondered whether it was worth replacing.
Well, I'm not sure of just what it's doing. It sounds like it's collecting heat off that standby loss off the boiler, so you have radiant heat.
Right.
Okay, and then it's distributing it into the room next to the boiler.
Well, there's a small duct system that was installed with it that goes up to the living room and the top floor.
Depending on how much it costs is going to determine whether or not it's worth it to fix it or not.
Well, that's the second problem. I was going to ask about the company that made it is now out of business.
Okay.
Or that installed it in town here. So I didn't know if you knew about these things and knew.
Well, no, but it sounds interesting. I mean, I would say depending on. First of all, how comfortable are you in the house without it?
Oh, plenty.
You're plenty comfortable without it.
Yeah, we have no...
So was it necessary to begin with? And
right. Well, I don't know. It was installed by the people before us. So.
Okay. So, you know, depending on the cost, it may determine whether or not it's going to be worth it to replace it. I can't say without knowing more about the system and what the costs are.
Uh-huh. Is the concept dangerous?
No, I don't think that it's gathering combustion byproducts. It sounds like it's just gathering waste heat in the room. The combustion byproduct should be going up through the house. But you could have an HVAC contractor or a heating, ventilation, and air conditioning contractor check it to see if the unit itself is backdrafting or causing CO or distributing CO.
Mm-hmm.
I ought to mention that what I was talking about the worst-case scenario test,
mm-hmm.
anybody could have an HVAC contractor do that as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. It sounds like it's a nice idea. That is, if you got waste heat, you might as well see if you can use it. But I wouldn't know how much waste heat actually would be generated, and then would you notice if you took that heat and you pumped it into living spaces, would you notice it? Would it be any warmer than if you weren't doing that?
Right. Yeah. It's hard to say whether something like that is worth fixing without, you know, knowing more detail.
Yeah. Well, let's go on again to Lawrence County, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was on a saw construction job the other day, and the way they were building the walls on this thing, if you start from the warm side, they had drywall. Then they had insulation. And I'm not sure whether that was craft-backed or what. I think it was just plain with no backing. Then they had the outside decking. Then they had this queen on the outside of that outside wall decking. And on the outside of that, they were putting stucco. What kind of a setup does that sound like to you for insulation?
Well, I'm not real sure. It might be what's called an EFS system, an exterior, what do they call those? I'm not familiar with it, I have to be honest. But I'd be real hesitant in this climate to put a vapor barrier in that position if they're actually putting Visqueen in that position.
Well, that's what they were doing, and that's what I was kind of curious about.
Yeah.
They were putting weep holes at the bottom on the outside
to let the moisture drain out.
Yeah. But now that was moisture that was getting through the stucco.
Right. So was it getting past the Visqueen, or was it?
No, it wasn't getting past the Visqueen. See, that was moisture that was soaking through the stucco, or going to soak through it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'd go down this Visqueen and drain out at the bottom.
So they had channels in the stucco or something.
Well, they had little weep holes down at the bottom, but the moisture just went in and soaked through and collected on the Visqueen was the way it looked to me. But I was more concerned about the moisture coming the other way, hitting that cold Visqueen.
Is this a house that you're building, or?
No. This was just a house that somebody else was building, and I just was.
You happened to see?
Yeah, I just was curious as to how they were doing it, and.
I'm not familiar with that application. I know that a lot of the stucco houses that have been built down in the South, they've had major moisture problems with them, and they've. There's been a lot of lawsuits over. What are called EFS systems.
I've heard that, but then EFS, what does that stand for?
Well, I wish I knew. I'm searching my brain for the words that go with that acronym. But
I think the idea for this thing came from, Florida, maybe.
Right.
I wondered if down there they were more...
Well, they do build differently. I mean, they use different techniques in their building because they're dealing with different moisture problems.
Right.
They're dealing with more moisture in the worst part of the summertime
a lot higher heat, whereas their heating load is practically negligible. I mean, they don't have much heating load at all.
Right.
So the farther south you go, the building practices change. There's an organization called EBIT, the Energy Efficient Builders Association, and they publish a guide for the northern climates, for the mix, what they call mixed climates, which are like southern Indiana and southern Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and then the southern climates. And a lot of people go by those, I mean, utilize those to determine what's right in terms of moisture control and energy efficiency.
Yeah. Well, I was just kind of curious about somebody else's idea on that. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're trying to get one more caller here. That's Charleston, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I was just wondering if your guest had any special considerations or comments on homes with geothermal heating systems. Ours is one of those built 11 years ago, and we're just curious about what the technology that's changed since then might suggest something.
Well, are you pretty satisfied with your geothermal system?
Yes, very, very much so.
Yeah, and that's the indication that I get from most people that I talk to about geothermal. The school of thought that I come from is that geothermal works really well. Geothermal, however, is expensive, and you have to kind of be in it for the long haul to recoup the initial cost. We're building houses in a lot of cases, we're building houses very energy efficiently right now. And their BTU input requirement is very, very low. So we can satisfy the BTU input requirement on a lot of these new houses that we're building with the size of a heating plant that's about the same size as a water heater. Sizing is a really important issue for new construction, to properly size the heating and cooling equipment. But I'm a strong believer in geothermal systems. I think that they're a very promising technology.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to stop. I'm sorry, we got a caller we can't take.
Is it possible for me to get a website out there?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
For those people that are interested, I've got a couple of websites that I'd like to give. One is to an organization called ResNet. It's the National Residential Energy Services Network.
Mm-hmm.
They are at natresnet.org. And then my website is ERHA, which stands for Energy Rated Homes of America, ERHA.com/Midwest. So that's ERHA.com/Midwest. And then I have one more that's just sort of a something that I'm doing for a project in October, EnergyStarHomesMidwest.com is a tour of homes that we're doing in October with a home show. So if people are interested, they can check those out.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you.
Our guest, Mark Jansen, Program Director of Energy Rated Homes Midwest.